Thanks for joining us. I'm Casey Counts, and in just a few minutes after NPR News, we'll be happy to take your questions for Republican State Party Chair Steve Pierce and Democratic Party Communications Director Miranda Van Dyke. 575-646-2212 is the number to call. We'll find out what issues the Republican and Democratic parties will be emphasizing as we move into 2021 and the next legislative session. We'll get their reactions to the stimulus bill passed in the special session. And we'll see how they feel the country can move forward into 2021 and beyond. Voice of the Public starts right after NPR News on KRWG Public Media. Good afternoon, it's 1:06 and time for Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. This is Casey Counts, and the first half of our program, we will be joined by Republican Party Chair Steve Pierce, who is on the line with us now. Good afternoon, Steve. How are you?
Well, I'm doing just great. How are you doing, Casey?
Doing fine. Thank you very much. Steve, I want to start by asking, how are you and your family doing during this pandemic?
We're healthy and blessed. We appreciate you asking, and want to know how you all are doing also.
Well, so far so good. I think as things have progressed, certainly over the months, more and more of us are being affected personally. So many have lost loved ones already. So many have had loved ones sick and hospitalized, and certainly I can now count myself, you know, in that category. We know that we're in it for a few more months here. So I'd like to talk a little bit, Steve, first about the stimulus that the legislature just allocated in its special session, and find out, you know, from your perspective, how you feel about the stimulus and where it's going and what you think is going to have to happen next.
Well, the stimulus, if you do the basic math, is less than a half or probably close to a third of what people who are making $30,000 a year would be getting just in their paycheck. So where we need to be going is get people back to work and manage to live somewhat normal lives with the COVID. In my opinion, we can't stay shut down just forever. And that stimulus package, it was needed, was helpful, but it also is not going to do much when you look at 4, 5, 6 more months being shut down, is what the biostatistician from Albuquerque said just when this most recent shutdown occurred, that we could be looking to 5 to 7 months to move almost any of the counties into the green zone, and still they're operating only at 50% if we get to the green zone. So somewhere we have to get back to where people can earn a living, pay the rent, pay the mortgage, and just survive.
How do we do that? Obviously, we're all looking forward to a vaccine becoming available, but we do know it's going to be quite some time before most of us can get it. So without the benefit of the vaccine and given the surge in numbers, how do we get back to work?
Well, the surge in numbers, if my reading of the statistics is correct, is more a surge in the infection rather than a surge in the mortality. So yes, more people are getting it, but the mortality rates are still fairly low. Other states are beginning to open up, and they have the surges too. They have they're trying to manage and open schools, get back to normal. South Dakota, a friend of mine's governor there, they've never shut down there, but they've become more insistent that, okay, the people at risk are going to be more at risk, and so let's be very cautious. Here are the people not so much at risk. So we begin to let people make the decisions that are best for their family rather than one size fits all. it looks like the only way that, we can go forward. The European countries that shut completely down have done devastating things to their economies, and I don't think that, we want to be in that, position. They've done devastating things to the economies, and yet they're still seeing the spike in infections that we are. So the question is, if we say that we're going to shut everything down for another 7 months, what if we still have the infections at that point? Will it be another 7 months, another year? At some point, it seems like we have to learn to manage and live with, COVID-19.
I want to talk a little bit more about, you mentioned European countries, and the difference between having, you know, a national approach to this virus and kind of what happened here in the United States. One of the things about the European nations, many other countries around the world, not just in Europe, but they actually had a summer, Steve, whereas in the United States, we're on wave three now of this virus, and we didn't get that break in between, you know, a wave one and a wave two, like many of those countries did. It seems logical that they handled it better than we did. Why do you say that's not the case?
Well, if you take a look at Italy, they had tremendous, infections there, and they had to shut down. To say that, they're better off than we are, their economies have been set on their heels completely. Ours in New Mexico and ours in the U.S. Has suffered dramatically, but I don't think that we have suffered the tremendous losses in jobs, losses in, capabilities to create jobs as the European countries.
You know, Italy was one of those countries early on that we saw, you know, the devastating effects of the first wave of the virus. And they got hit hard, and, they got hit early. And it really seems like there were some things that perhaps we could have learned from that situation. At this point, Steve, you mentioned the death rate coming down. And while overall that is true because a younger portion of the population is being infected, and we also have a little bit better news in terms of, treatments and, how we approach the disease. But we just hit another record in New Mexico for the daily death total, 44 deaths just yesterday. And if we look to neighboring El Paso, Texas, they're losing a person every hour. And so it begs the question, where do you find that balance between how many lives it's okay to lose and keeping the economy open?
I think the beginning point is to do a deeper analysis than just to say the daily death rate. When last I looked at the average age of, death, it was around 78. And people with, pre-existing conditions, people that were already in a weakened physical condition. And so when you, if you begin to break the deaths down into, categories, you see that younger people almost have no mortality. That the older the person, then obviously you have a much greater intensity. But then we, even in the age group, you need to break down into the people that had weakened physical conditions. I don't think that it is, it's going to be effective to simply say that we are, losing this many per day. It is, I think that that's going to be too broad a brush to paint with.
All right, Steve. We have a call from Matt. Thank you, Matt, for calling Voice of the Public. Good afternoon.
Hi there. I had a question for the chairman. I was wondering, with the Republican Party holding their meeting this weekend to vote on who will be chair, are you worried about being voted out of your position?
Not necessarily. If they vote a different way, then I'm fine with that. I'm not worried about it, no.
Oh, all right. Thank you, Matt, for calling. 646-2212 is the telephone number to call. 575-646-2212. If you have a question for Republican Party Chairman Steve Pierce, who is joining us here at KRWG to talk about some different issues, not just regarding coronavirus, of course, but before we move off that subject, you did mention briefly the new red to green plan, and you suggested that it would be some months before many counties are able to move down that path. What do you think is the best path forward?
Yeah, to ask the question, what's the best path forward now is very difficult. What the best path forward would have been back at the beginning of this would be much easier to answer. And I always recognize my friend Kristi Noem, who is the governor of South Dakota, and she never has shut the state down at all. Their infection rates mostly have paralleled ours. The mortality rates have been less than ours. They're like us, a big western state, a lot of geography, small population, very distributed population. And so, in my opinion, that was a much better choice because they haven't seen the spike in suicides that New Mexico has. They're not seeing the mental difficulties that New Mexico has. And so they are coming into the second or third spike, ever how it is defined, in a much stronger condition. Their families are not at the edge of their life savings. And I was just talking with a young single mom. My wife was just talking to a young single mom yesterday. She's trying to make a living and has spent up all of her life savings. And now then she's at the very edge of despair. And so you find a population, say, in a state like South Dakota without tremendously different infection rates, without tremendous different mortality than what New Mexico has, and they still have their financial resources. They still have the stability of knowing that they can live the next month. And so what to do now is very difficult. And by the way, it was not me saying that it's going to be 5 to 7 months. That's a specialist in the field of biostatistics. And so when someone of that caliber says it's going to be 5 to 7 months before we move any of the counties out of the red zone, we got 32 of the 33 counties in the red zone, and even if they move to green, they're still going to be only open at 50%. If you've tried to run a business on 50% of your revenues, it is very difficult because the margins occur usually in the last 20% of your business that comes through the door. The rest of it's just to pay the bills. And so even if we get to that green zone, we're still going to have tremendous difficulties.
You know, you mentioned, South Dakota and a lot of people. Obviously, the Dakotas have been recently hit very, very hard by this virus. In fact, South Dakota just one day ago topped the list of states with the highest COVID-19 death rates this week. So, you know, that bears to be mentioned. Let's go back to the phone now. 575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call. And Paul is holding with the question. Good afternoon, Paul.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Mr. Chairman, I just want you to please comment on the president's continuing to call our election, our presidential election, a fraud. And I'd like to know whether you think he's damaging our democracy by continuing to take this stand. When are the Republicans going to concede that former Vice President Biden won the election and is going to be the new president on January the 20th? And I wonder, do you agree that this is damaging our democracy for the president to persist in this? I mean, no president has ever done this before. I'll hang up and I'll listen to your comments off the phone. Thank you, sir.
Thank Bye you, now. Paul.
Sure, thanks. Actually, if you take a look closely at the Democrat Party last year, Stacey Abrams never conceded her loss as governor of Georgia. So the fact that that people are disagreeing with the outcomes of the election is not anything new. Also, if you remember, the Democrats said on the inauguration day, we're going to start the impeachment efforts today. It does not look like Democrats exactly ever accepted the outcome of that election in 2016. Now, where we stand as the Republican Party, we're impounding ballots today. because there are anomalies that we see in the Mexico. We faced many of the things that were facing Republicans across the country. Out of watching the certification process, most
Steve, I hate to interrupt you, Steve, but the phone is starting to break up a little bit. So I want to be sure that we're hearing your answers clearly.
I'm just sitting in the same place. So tell me, is it okay now?
That's much better. Thank you. Please continue.
Yeah, so we are impounding ballots today in Bernalillo County. We're going to continue. We're going to impound in Doniana County, I suspect. But we're taking a very close look at what occurred in New Mexico. Republicans were kicked out of the certification of absentee ballots. It was against the law, and that happened many places. So I think the president has a right to say, wait, what's happened? These people were eliminated out of the process to watch the vote to make sure it's correct. That's the reason that the law asks for poll challengers from both parties to be allowed to be in. So I think that the president is asking questions in many of the places where ballots were accepted after the due date, when ballots were not certified with the signature as required by law. In this state, it's impossible for us to say, because we were kicked out of several of the key counties during that process.
Let's talk about that. You say you were kicked out of key counties. We understand that poll watchers are welcome to come in, but there are certain rules that the poll watchers are expected to abide by. And in our case here in Doniana County, the presiding judge, a Republican, also, you know, responsible for making sure those rules are enforced. So what was the goal of the Republican poll watchers, and why do you suggest they were asked to leave?
Well, again, you have several points of impact on this. The first point of impact, the challengers were just watching the absentee certification process. That's where they check the signature. It's supposed to match the signature of the voter. And then the second thing they're supposed to check is the last four digits of the Social Security number. They were just summarily asked to leave, and they were moved out of about four or five counties, Doniana, Sandoval, Bernalillo, and one or two others. I don't remember exactly. Now, the point that you seem to be referring to, Casey, is where they were summarily ushered out by the sheriff. And what happened there was in Doniana County, one of our challengers had a question, went up to to a table. They had illegally quarantined our people 40 or 50 feet away from the process. They couldn't see it. They couldn't do their job. But he had a question. He went up to the table. One of the election officials began to shout at him, "Leave your hands off my book. Don't you touch my book." The Republican shouted back. Then they called the sheriff and said there was an altercation and your guy assaulted one of the election officials. So we had our lawyer go down. Lawyer's a former prosecutor, went down. He was able to get to the videotape that is required by law to have. And the video didn't show any kind of an altercation at all. It showed the shouting back and forth, but there was actually not any physical contact. That fact never made it into the press, but the fact that the county clerk called the media as soon as they did this, indicated they were spoiling for a fight. They wanted to make a narrative that Republicans were there disrupting. It was not a true statement, and it was actually the county clerk who was in violation of the law by not allowing the poll challengers to get up close enough to see what they're doing. They could not see the count on the machines. They couldn't see the serial number of the machines. All of those things are pretty important in the challenging and the poll watching function that's described in law.
How will the country move forward from this period of time, Steve?
We'd have to have much more transparency in the process. It's impossible to fathom that we have such antiquated processes that we're counting ballots for days after. If you put your credit card into a machine in Europe or Africa, they can tell you within seconds if you've got enough money in the bank to cover that purchase. And yet, for some reason, we can't find the access to systems that will allow us to.
We're having a little bit of trouble again with your cell phone, Steve. Sorry about that.
No, I'm sitting very static here. So the inability to process these votes in a timely fashion is counterproductive.
Well,
to both.
And obviously from state to state. Now in New Mexico, it took a day. But we were anticipating a wave of mail-in ballots. Obviously, for many months, it was a topic of discussion. We knew it was going to be part of the process, and more so than ever before in our lifetimes during the pandemic. Many states don't allow those absentee ballots to be counted before the day of the election. So that's going to naturally lead to a much longer time for those votes to be counted. Laws differ from state to state to state, meaning it's not done the same way here that it's done in Pennsylvania and all over the country. So rather than such antiquated systems, do you suggest that it would be better to have, say, a national approach to elections?
Not necessarily. I really do like the Federalist approach. I like states having more power. I'm just saying that there ought to be a certification process for those states. The questions that are coming up on the Dominion voting machines are important questions, and they should be looked at in great detail. The Dominion representatives were showing, we had several recounts going either yesterday or the day before, and maybe both. And so those recounts typically are fairly innocuous processes. Then both parties have people there watching. In this case, Dominion sent representatives, I think, to every single one of those recounts, and they were interrupting, saying, you can't do this, you can't do that. I'm not sure what standing that a software company has to tell states and to tell people who are trying to figure out what happened in the machines that what they should be and shouldn't be doing. We suggested to the local county that maybe they should get the sheriff and usher these outsiders from outside the state. They're protecting their interests and their software out of the process, because I don't think they had a standing in this counting. We have several elections across New Mexico that are within 10 or 12, 25, 30 votes, and so mandatory recounts are required, and yet you've got these out-of-staters there. So I think more transparency, a greater certification process on the software that's being used across the country. But no, I don't think I would expect that the federal government could do any better than what states are doing. I would just say some better certification.
I can't believe we just have a few minutes left at this point. So a couple of things to get to. What are the issues that the New Mexico GOP is emphasizing as we move into the new year?
Well, we think that several really great things have happened. The diversity of the Republican Party has expanded dramatically. We had African-American male and female candidates running as Republicans and as conservative Republicans. Native Americans, of course, Hispanics. Hispanics filled, I think, five or six of the statewide elected offices during this last 2 years. And so I think the number one thing is to keep the diversity going. We made historic outreaches into the state during this last 2 years, 3.1 million contacts, 2.1 of those are phone calls, 1 million doors knocked. During the last 60 days of the campaign, we were hitting mostly on Democrat doors and finding really strong positive results and saying, hey, we're really looking at what the Republicans stand for because the Democrat Party has left us. We had a lot of candidates that were walk-away Democrats who ran as conservative Republicans because they felt like their party had left them. So we're going to continue that outreach, continue to engage in these demographics that haven't always been engaged by the Republican Party. We're going to continue to be very visible. We'll continue to let our values be known. And so those are the things that I think are important.
What about when it comes to legislative issues?
Well, that typically does not originate from the party. You've got your caucuses, the Republican caucus in the Senate and the House, And as a former legislator, I really think the party should not be too engaged in creating a legislation. We will voice our opinion on legislative issues, but I really don't think it's for us from outside to dictate what they should be doing. They're the ones who run for office, get elected, and then elect their leadership. And so we have a strong working relationship with our leaders in the House and the Senate, and we'll talk to them, but we will not try to originate.
Let's talk about Yvette Harrell's win in Congressional District 2. How do you think she achieved that win?
Well, number one, at the two-year point, then Congresswoman Small had a record to compare to, and when that record was made public during the campaign, it surprised a lot of the people who had supported her, thinking that she would probably be a very conservative Democrat in Congress. And that was not exactly the case to what level. I will leave that to the voters to figure out what they think. But I think that was a major thing. I think that Yvette Harrell ran a better race this time than last time. I think she was more confident as a candidate. She engaged in the debates. I think that was a very key thing. So you had a combination of elements. Both candidates being better known, but then you had that national flow and then the flow inside New Mexico with conservative Democrats feeling left behind by their party. When the progressives beat those conservative Democrat senators in the primary, I think that really damaged a lot of the credibility that the Democrat Party had with conservative Democrats. And I think that they looked for somewhere else to vote. And so I think it was a combination of three or four things that led to that change between Congresswoman Small and Congressman-elect Harrell.
All right. Republican Party Chairman Steve Pearce, thank you so much for spending the first half of our program with us today. We appreciate you being here.
Casey, I always appreciate the work you're doing. Keep it up and give us a call if we can answer questions. Thanks, and everyone be safe.
We certainly will. Thank you, Steve. And at 132-575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call to be part of Voice of the Public this afternoon. We appreciate your calls, and we welcome Democratic Party of New Mexico Communications Director Miranda Van Dyke. Hi, Miranda.
Hi, Casey. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. How are you? Thank you for joining us.
I'm fine, thanks. Thank you so much for having me on.
Just want to point out that we did invite the party chair on, and she was looking forward to doing it, but then had a scheduling conflict. So thank you for stepping in and being with us this afternoon.
Yeah, of course. Happy to do it.
Let's start off talking a little bit, as we did with Steve. Just want to ask you how you and your family are holding up through the pandemic and what this has meant for you personally.
Yeah, you know, we are healthy and safe, and that's the most we can ask for. So we're incredibly thankful for that. But it's definitely been a hard year for everybody. And, you know, while I'm lucky not to have been as personally affected, I haven't lost anyone personally, I know it's just been a really difficult year. So we are holding up, thankfully.
And let's talk a little bit about the stimulus that was passed in the special legislative session and how the Democratic Party thinks that how effective it will be and what will need to happen as we move into the future fighting this pandemic into the new year.
Absolutely. You know, I think both the stimulus and the governor's recently released red-green program are really good steps, and they're important tools in helping us balance making sure that we keep New Mexicans as safe as possible while also allowing our economy to reopen when it's possible and when it is safe. So, you know, I think we've seen from the beginning that Governor Lujan Grisham is really committed to making sure that we're protecting New Mexicans and we're saving New Mexican lives, and I think that's remained a top priority for her and for our state legislature. So I'm glad to see that we are taking these steps, but there's always more work to be done. And unfortunately, until there's a vaccine, you know, we're all going to have to continue to wear our masks and come together and do our best to keep this thing at bay.
you know, she has taken some of the strongest steps in the country from the beginning of the pandemic. And obviously that is not without controversy when you have, you know, neighboring states that are staying open to greater degrees. And obviously, you know, business owners are, you know, in a terrible position as a result. How do you think those stimulus funds will help those people get through this pandemic? And what does the Democratic Party think needs to be done further to help recover?
Yeah, I think that especially making sure that we have earmarked money for people who are unemployed as well as for small businesses is something that's huge. You know, we are definitely proud to be supporting our small businesses, and it is a challenge at this time. So I think making sure that that money gets to small businesses is important. Unfortunately, that we haven't seen the response from the federal government that we need to really make sure that we are not seeing this huge increase in cases. And as I think you mentioned earlier, we're seeing this really tragic situation where we have deaths increasing. We're going through record numbers of deaths at this point in New Mexico every day. So that's really tough to see. And I think the governor is making the hard choices to lead and to save New Mexican lives. So while it is unfortunate and while absolutely we feel that pain, it is, you know, the first priority is making sure that New Mexicans are safe and healthy.
And you touched a little bit on the red to green plan for reopening. And one of the things that Mr. Pierce said is that it could be, you know, many months before we actually see counties get to that point. Do you feel that it is that many months down the road before we could see our counties be getting to that green zone of at least reopening to 50%?
I think it's hard to say, but one of the things that I think is fantastic about the Red to Green program is that it's based on data and it's based on information that we have from scientists and medical professionals. These aren't arbitrary numbers or arbitrary standards. They're based on these numbers that we have that allow us to reopen safely. So I think that's the really key thing is that, you know, we're doing this in a way that's very well thought out and that puts the emphasis on medical professionals and not on politics.
I want to talk a little bit about the Democratic Party's priorities moving forward, moving into the next legislative session and into 2021.
Absolutely. You know, well, our priority is always the reforms and the issues that affect hardworking people. So we've already seen some incredible advances out of our legislature and from our governor, including expanding the Working Families Tax Credit and expanding access to education. And I think we're going to see more of those sort of bread and butter issues that are a real focus, you know, making sure that we continue to address the COVID pandemic and continue to provide relief as much as possible. And also making sure that we, you know, are focusing on diversifying our economy, making it an economy that works for everybody, making sure that access to healthcare is expanded and that we are continuing to protect people's access to healthcare coverage. So I think that's kind of continues to be our focus, is just the things that really affect New Mexicans in their day-to-day lives.
We hear a lot about diversifying the economy in New Mexico. And what are some of the ways the Democratic Party thinks the paths forward to diversification are?
You know, I think that making sure that we're just open to new industries. You know, I love the way we've seen the growth of the film industry in New Mexico over the last few years, and that's been something that's been really wonderful for our state. And, you know, I know that the pandemic has absolutely affected a lot of those things very severely, but I think we continue to look forward to just welcoming new industries to the state and making sure that there are opportunities for all New Mexicans.
I want to move back to the election, and, you know, there are still some arguments being made by the Republican Party that, you know, there isn't enough transparency and there are some ways that the state needs to think about better safeguarding its elections. Where does the Democratic Party stand on the issue of voter security and the outcome of the election?
Yeah, I mean, we are absolutely in favor of having safe and secure elections. And largely we've seen that our Secretary of State and our county clerks have done a fantastic job with that. We have very rarely seen any instances of voter fraud in New Mexico or any challenges with that. It's not something we have a record of. And so, you know, that's something that we are really glad to see here. And I think that we have had wonderfully transparent elections and really great work from all of our polling officials who managed to make this happen in the middle of a pandemic, which was absolutely a challenge.
Let's talk a little bit about poll watchers. The Democratic Party obviously has poll watchers, as the Republican Party does. What were their experiences going through this election? And not every county in New Mexico has a Democratic county clerk. So obviously there are some places where Democratic poll watchers might have similar experiences. Did you find any of that?
We did not. In general, our poll watchers really found that they were able to monitor what was going on, and it was a successful relationship. The biggest instances, I think, that we saw at some polling sites were issues of intimidation or electioneering. That was kind of the main concern. We did, have several instances where people were far too close to polling places, wearing shirts that were primarily advocating for President Trump, things that are not allowed to be done there. So, or we had instances of people sort of driving past polling places repeatedly, honking their horns, or even trucks lining up in large numbers outside of a polling place that had to be asked to leave because they were illegally within 100 feet of the polling place. So that was our main sort of challenge throughout, but we did not have any issues in terms of our poll watchers and their ability to watch the count and make sure everything went smoothly.
Let's talk about some of the statewide races. I still want to refer to him as Congressman Pierce because I got so used to Chairman Pierce. Chairman Pierce pointed out that some of the more conservative Democrats who lost in their primaries, in one case, John Arthur Smith, for example, and that seat ended up going to a Republican. That was not the case in all of the races that were similar. What is the Democratic Party of New Mexico taking away from those races where you had more liberal Democrats that won in the primaries over the more conservative Democrats?
We always, as the Democratic Party, stay neutral in primaries. We know that we have a lot of great ideas within our party, and one of the things that is wonderful about the Democratic Party is that we are open to those debates. We're open to hearing from, ideas across our spectrum and figuring out what works best for the people and making sure that everyone has a voice. So, the voters of those districts did decide to, in some cases, elect people who were farther left, and, if in the primary, in the next cycle, if they decide to go the other way, that is also something we 100% support. So, the party is always very much in favor of just kind of this diversity of ideas and that lively discussion within our party. And, we continue to support it through primaries and through however we can.
Communications Director for the Democratic Party of New Mexico, Miranda Van Dyke, with us today, 575-646-2212. I want to get back to a question that a caller had for Chairman Pierce in terms of the president's refusal to accept that the election was a secure election and continually referring to it as fraudulent. And in Steve's answer, he suggested that Stacey Abrams, who lost a close one in Georgia, also refused to concede. How do you square those two things?
I think Stacey Abrams has moved on and gone on to do wonderful work registering voters in Georgia. I believe in her case, the refusal to concede was based on issues within the system that were disenfranchising people. And we have not seen a lot of cases of disenfranchisement or issues that hold up in terms of what's going on with the current presidential election. Most of the president's claims of voter fraud and of votes being thrown out have been disproved and very much debunked. And we've seen repeatedly in court cases that his argument's not holding up. So, I think it is pretty clear to most Americans that he did not win this election. And, it's unfortunate that he continues to attempt to undermine this and continues to deny the reality of this and concede.
How do you think the country will move forward past this period?
I think Joe Biden has made it really clear that he wants to be a president for all Americans. He's said that repeatedly throughout his campaign. He has, brought in Republicans to speak during the DNC and in general. And I think that this is a time where we really do need to come together as a nation and heal. And I think that he is the person to lead us through that.
I want to get your reaction to the Congressional District 2 race as well. Yvette Harrell clinched that seat from the incumbent, Xochitl Torres-Small. What factors do you think went into...